Washington has seen it all. But there are those events that some folks say are a
game changer.
It's going to be a game changer.
I do think that this has the potential to be a game changer.
But this should be a game changer.
And even at a time when every news event seems like it's bigger than the last, Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement seems like an actual real game changer.
Justice Anthony Kennedy, a very special guy also, just announced a little while ago his retirement from the United States Supreme Court. Great man. And I'm very honored that he chose to do it during my term in office because he felt confident in me to make the right choice and carry on his great legacy. That's why he did it.
But is this moment the game changer we think it is? I'm Amy Walter, and today on The Takeaway, the fight for the next Supreme Court justice just weeks ahead of the 2018 midterm elections. As Justice Anthony Kennedy, the crucial swing vote on the court, retires, he leaves a vacancy on the Supreme Court. And some say that means
President Trump will choose a nominee who will be anti-choice. I think we can be 100% sure of that.
It also means
Kennedy leaving at this moment is going to absolutely lead to a greater investment by conservative voters of all stripes in this political cycle.
So who will it galvanize? Republican voters excited for the chance for another conservative justice? Or will it further energize Democrats who are already fighting a GOP-controlled White House and Congress? Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell holds the reins for the next few months, but it wasn't that long ago he made his case that President Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, couldn't be confirmed in an election year.
We're in the process of picking a president, and that new president ought to make this appointment, which will affect the Supreme Court maybe for the next quarter of a century.
But today, he says it's not the same.
This is not 2016. There aren't the final months of a second-term constitutionally lame-duck presidency with a presidential election fast approaching.
And some Democrats say the Mueller investigation complicates things.
The President of the United States right now is a subject of an ongoing criminal investigation, an investigation that every member of this committee knows could end up before the Supreme Court.
Here to help make sense of all of this is Todd Ruger. He's a legal affairs staff director for CQ and Roll Call. Carol Doherty, he's the director of political research at the Pew Research Center. And Nancy Ognatovich, she's a congressional leadership reporter for Bloomberg Government. Welcome to you all.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Nancy, I want to start with you. I want you to help us understand Mitch McConnell for a second. Back in 2016, when there was another vacancy after Justice Scalia's death, McConnell said, nope, we can't have a vote. This is an election year. We need to wait till the people have their say. Now we are in 2018, also an election year, and McConnell says, well, this is different. So how does that work?
Successfully, he makes a distinction that that was a presidential year and a new president should have the ability to put forward a nominee, whereas this is a rather ordinary midterm election where it's, you know, the Senate and the House where you see the races. So that's his distinction. And I think he's getting away with that argument. I don't think that even though Democrats have protested that, they'll get very far with their argument that it's that the same standards should apply.
Though a Supreme Court justice cannot be confirmed without the Senate, and the Senate is on the ballot. A third of senators are on the ballot this year.
That's right. Control of the Senate is at stake here. And McConnell wants to do all he can during the period of time he's assured of being in the majority to get more conservative jurists on the bench, whether it's the Supreme Court or the appeals courts or the district courts. He's going after all of them. Right now, the Senate was going to be out a lot of October for campaigning for the midterm election. But we expect that they will push hard to get a vote on this before the election.
Is it your sense that Democrats are going to try anything else? We played a clip earlier of Senator Cory Booker saying, well, maybe the president shouldn't even be able to put anybody on the Supreme Court because of the investigation going on surrounding the Russia interference in the campaign. Do you think this gets any traction at all?
I don't think so. It's really good, I suppose, for the arguments that energize their base, but I don't think that that argument is going to go very far.
Carol, this argument about energizing the base, I've been hearing from Republicans for a while now that they really needed something to juice up the energy of their base because Democrats have been shown to be much more interested and engaged in the election thus far. Is it likely that a Supreme Court opening will be that juice they needed?
You know, it has the potential to energize people on both sides. Typically, Republicans have cared more about the court than Democrats. And this has the potential to do it for both sides. But I think, you know, especially among white evangelical voters who are so key to the Republican coalition in any election in 2018 and any election, that's, I think, what they're eyeing as they go forward.
Why do you think that Republicans have historically been more interested in control of the Supreme Court or what goes on in the Supreme Court than Democrats?
Well, I think some of it has to do with these social issues that are front and center before the court. And I think Republicans, obviously, especially white evangelicals, take very conservative positions on a lot of those issues, same-sex marriage, abortion, things like that. This is kind of the battleground for a lot of those issues. And, Democrats, by and large, I have to say a little note on the side here. Americans really don't follow the court all that closely from year to year. They follow the big decisions. So they don't know a lot about the court in the same way they know a lot about, say, Donald Trump and leading politicians, in part because the court's not on TV. So what gets attention are these big decisions especially about social issues.
Todd, I want to talk to you about some of the potential names of justices. There is a so-called short list, maybe 20, 25 names that President Trump is likely to turn to look for the next justice. Can you tell us where this short list came from?
Yeah, sure. If you go back to the election, President Trump made the Supreme Court one of his priorities in his campaign. And he talked about that was one of the reasons Republicans should vote for him. And he got to deliver on that with Neil Gorsuch. Neil Gorsuch was picked off of a list that Trump first created during the campaign. He updated it in November, and so there's about 20 to 25 lists names on the list. It comes through Leonard Leo, who is an advisor to the White House on judicial nominees. He was with the Federalist Society, but he's taking a break now, and he will be advising Trump on these picks. So these are all solidly, reliably conservative names on this list.
Can you walk through a couple of those names, and are they the same people that you see as a potential pick?
Yeah, so out of those 25 names, four, five, six maybe are bubbling up. That includes somebody like Senator Mike Lee, which would create quite an interesting confirmation process and vote. But the more traditional names on the list, one of them that catches most people's eyes is Brett Kavanaugh. He's an appeals court judge here in Washington. He's got a really solid record on administrative law and environmental law. He's long been sort of a darling of the right and the conservatives when it comes to who might be the next Supreme Court pick. He was not originally on Trump's names of 20 people during the campaign, so he was just added in November. One of the things that gets me about that is he's a former Justice Kennedy clerk. There's another name on the list, Raymond Kethledge. He's an appeals court judge on the Sixth Circuit, and he also was a Kennedy clerk. There's a woman named Amy Barrett, who was recently confirmed to the Seventh Circuit. Trump appointed her to the Seventh Circuit, and she lives in Indiana, which is giving rise to some speculation that she might get picked. She's also very solidly, thought to be very solidly against Roe v. Wade. And then another name I might throw out there is Judge Amul Thapar. He's also in the Sixth Circuit, but he comes from Kentucky, so that's Mitch McConnell's state, and that Mitch McConnell might be pulling for him.
Todd, we've already seen a number of outside groups saying that they're going to spend a lot of money. This is both from the conservative and liberal side to try to influence, I guess, the votes of senators whenever this vote ultimately takes place. Can you talk to us a little bit about the money that's going into this and whether and how it becomes effective?
Sure. Just as you were speaking about the Republicans being more energized about the Supreme Court, they're more organized when it comes to backing judicial confirmations. There's a group called the Judicial Crisis Network. on the right that was involved, first of all, about $7 million in blocking Obama's pick of Merrick Garland to be on the bench. And then they say they spent $10 million to back Justice Gorsuch's confirmation. And they have already purchased more than $1 million of ads targeting vulnerable Democratic senators when it comes to whoever gets nominated this time. There's also a Koch brothers affiliated group that has said they were going to spend seven figures on advertising on this. On the other side, you have Demand Justice. This is a group that was just formed in May as a sort of a response to the Judicial Crisis Network. They have a goal of raising $10 million in their first year, but this could certainly boost that effort, and they plan on doing advertisements. Both sides plan on doing big grassroots campaign, getting out the voters, having them call their senators. The pressure on one side is going to be for the Democrats to keep all of the Democrats together and maybe pick off one or two Republicans. The energy on the right is just going to be keeping those Republicans together. And in each case, they're just going to let them know that there are consequences electorally for their votes.
Todd, how many serious targets are there in terms of folks who could be on the fence or who could be influenced by a campaign?
By my count, there are five major ones. On the Democratic side, you've got Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, and Joe Donnelly in Indiana. Those three voted for Justice Gorsuch when he was in confirmation last year. Justice Gorsuch ended up getting 54 votes. And those three are currently running for re-election in states that Trump won. There's also Bill Nelson, who's in a tough race down in Florida. And then on the right, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins are the ones that might have concerns about a nominee that goes too far in appearing to constrict access to abortion.
And Murkowski and Collins voted against the Republican Obamacare repeal bill as well.
Correct. So there's some people on the left are focusing on, we can maybe highlight how the health care will be affected by this decision, and that will be able to pick off a couple of Republicans based on that. But if you look at their votes on all of the lower court nominees that Trump has put up, which all Democrats have all said are mostly against Roe v. Wade, they've supported those. On the other hand, the Supreme Court is in its own universe. It's a much bigger deal.
So, Todd, do you see that then as an issue that is going to be front and center at these confirmation hearings? And if so, can you talk to us a little bit about how the issue of Roe v. Wade and abortion has developed as a line of questioning for potential Supreme Court justices?
Yeah, sure. There is no doubt that this is going to be one of the premier issues at this confirmation hearing. When Neil Gorsuch, Trump's first pick, went through his confirmation hearings, it was definitely a topic. If you remember, Trump promised to appoint justices who would overturn Roe v. Wade. So it was clearly a question that he was going to be asked. When he was asked, he did what justices have done for years, which is he avoided saying what his personal view on this was. He said Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. He was also pressed, this is definitely going to come up again too, Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, pressed him on that, in this issue of Trump in the White House. Did he ask you, did he make you promise, did he get a litmus test from you on this issue? And Justice Gorsuch replied, you know, I would have walked out of the Oval Office. And then he added something that will help this next nominee, too. He said, that's not appropriate for the White House or that end of Pennsylvania Avenue, and it's not appropriate for to be asked on this end of Pennsylvania Avenue either. And so judicial nominees have had this way of avoiding these questions, saying what their personal experience is.
I mean, it's interesting because we have not asked this question in many, many years, but back in the days of like 2005, 2006, most Americans wanted to know what court nominees felt about Roe v. Wade and abortion, and it'd be interesting to know if that's still the case.
Well, when I was talking to Senator Grassley, who of Iowa, he's a Republican who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, he basically already said to me the nominee is going to follow the tradition that has been done, and so I think everybody's going to be a little frustrated At the end of the day, when this question.
So is there going to be then, we're going to see a lot of posturing, surprisingly, from senators with the questioning, trying to be that one person who cracks the justice, the potential justice?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that can go on for hours on end. But it happened that Gorsuch was very smooth and successful at avoiding some of those questions in his confirmation hearings and on the floor. Things moved really, I think, rather quickly.
Here's one of the tricks that Democrats have been trying to use in the lower court nominations, because Trump has put forward a bunch of nominees that the Democrats are opposed to, and they also say are you know, sort of in line to overturn Roe v. Wade or chip away at abortion protections. And one thing they do is they ask about Brown v. Board of Education, which is decades-old law that about desegregating schools. It's widely lauded as one of the country's best decisions. And if they say what they think about Brown v. Board of Education, then they can roll into the more controversial cases like Roe v. Wade. Well, if you answered Brown, why won't you answer Roe? So what you're going to see is a nominee that is going to be very guarded about answering any questions about any previous Supreme Court rulings. But there are a lot of other secondary things, I would say. One would be freedom of religion.
Yep.
There are a lot of cases going through now as to whether a baker has to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding. Does a photographer have to take photographs for a same-sex wedding? Do state employees have to serve people in their state who are in same-sex marriages? And so there's a lot of sort of these around-the-edges fringe freedom of religion issues. There's also free speech issues. One, there was a case last term that was free speech, but it was related to whether pregnancy centers in California had to post information about low-cost abortions. So these are the kind of issues that animate on the right.
I also think that collective bargaining issues are a real motivator on the right-hand side and for Mitch McConnell and the court, you know, cases that involve collective bargaining rights is something to watch, too.
McConnell has also been a huge in campaign finance reform and keeping any sort of limits on the money flowing into politics.
That's right.
Carol, we have about a little over a minute left. I want to get you to weigh in on whether a Supreme Court justice and the very public battle over that nomination, how this impacts voters and who's more likely than not to be influenced by this issue.
Well, I think, you know, what we've seen, we did our most recent polling on the midterms in early June, and this is already pretty much of a nationalized election already. I mean, we had a record share of voters saying that partisan control of Congress would be a factor in their vote already. And so I think it will intensify voters on both sides. I mean, one of the things we saw people to watch are younger women who favor the Democratic candidate by more than 40 points in our most recent polling, and how this issue of abortion and Roe v. Wade works with
Do you know
voters.
How it works right now with those voters, how they feel about it, and have those views about abortion changed?
Views on abortion have not changed much over the decades. In fact, unlike a lot of social issues like, say, same-sex marriage, we haven't seen much change on abortion. But younger women in particular are very supportive of keeping abortion legal.
I want to thank our guests for joining me. Todd Ruger from CQ and Roll Call, Nancy Ognatovich, a congressional leadership reporter for Bloomberg Government, and Carol Doherty. He's the director of political research at the Pew Research Center. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
you.
Amy.